This is the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President, Tony Perkins.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. Coming up, Congress was snowed out this past week, but they will be returning this coming week. And waiting for them will be a vote to override the president's veto of the defunding of Obamacare and Planned Parenthood. Congressman Mark Meadows of North Carolina is here for that discussion and a look at the Republican race for the White House. Also, a forthcoming study on pornography reveals some very disturbing trends. FRC Senior Vice President for Policy Rob Swartzwalder is here with those details. And some big news for our listeners on the Bot Radio Network. Beginning on Monday, beginning this coming Monday, you can tune in live at 5 p.m. Eastern, 4 Central, to the daily edition of Washington Watch. That's right. Every day, 1 hour. The daily 1 hour program is available to you beginning this Monday at 4 p.m. We'll bring you not only the newsmakers that you hear on this weekend edition, but it's interactive. You can call in and be a part of the program. So tune in this Monday at 4 p.m. Central Time on the Bot Radio Network. If you're looking for more information, go to TonyPerkins.com. You can find out more about today's guests, the topics, and you can sign up for my daily update, which comes to you Monday through Friday right there in your email inbox. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me at T Perkins. All right, with last week's snowstorm, Congress got a few snow days. They did not come in this week, but there will be a lot waiting for them when they do return this coming week. The House will vote to override President Obama's veto of the reconciliation bill that defunds the lion's share of Obamacare and redirects about 80% of the funding that was going to Planned Parenthood. Now, speaking of Obamacare, the Congressional Budget Office, after estimating the 2016 enrollment figures for Obamacare to be at 21 million, they have now changed that to just 13, a drop of 8 million enrollees, about 40% decrease. Now, CBO also expects the peak number to only be 16 million. They had predicted that number to be 24 million just last March. So what does that mean for the future of Obamacare? Well, joining me now with his analysis on this is a member of the House Freedom Caucus. He represents the 11th Congressional District of North Carolina, Congressman Mark Meadows. Mark, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's great to be back with you. And as you say, it was a big snow week this last week, but a busy week coming up, and we're going to get to address the Affordable Care Act, or as I would like to call it, the Unaffordable Care Act, when we get back.
Well, you actually got snowed in D.C. as well, so you were here for the week. But when the CBO rolled out those new numbers, were you surprised by that, that they were so far off in the projected enrollment numbers?
Well, I think what I was more surprised at is that CBO finally admitted it. They're catching up with what the American people know, is that Obamacare is really not working for the average mom and dad. I was talking to a business owner just the other day, and they said that their insurance premium is actually more than their mortgage payment. And when you start to see that, the enrollment numbers, and I might add, how we justified how it was supposedly going to pay for itself was with 24 million enrollees. So now with these new estimates, there's no way that it actually will ever pay for itself other than raising taxes and raising premiums on those, many of whom are least likely to be able to afford it. So it's troubling to me. It's also one of those, one of the things that came out, Tony, in that CBO, was that they expect insurance premiums to continue to go up even at a higher clip. And so that's troubling news as well that was hidden in that CBO report.
Well, one of the nation's largest health insurance providers, United, has they're actually suggesting they may pull out of the government exchange because they're losing so much money. And what was fascinating, in fact, it was this week in the Wall Street Journal story about that. In fact, the Wall Street Journal had an editorial about it. But the fact is they are doing everything they can to reduce their costs so they can survive under this scheme set up. In fact, it's one of the few places where businesses are trying to get rid of customers. You know, in the free market system, people want customers. But when the government interjects itself, as they have in the healthcare, businesses can't do business. They don't want customers. It's costing them money to have customers.
Well, you're right, and that's exactly what they're doing, Tony. And I think the interesting thing is not just United Healthcare, Blue Cross and Blue Shield, which is one of the nation's largest provider, is having a difficult time making a profit. They're looking at ways to cut back, and ultimately, what everybody wants is the American taxpayer to bail them out. And you know, my whole premise and why we sent this to the president was more in looking at the you know, his veto of it was really saying, let's do a reset, let's find a replacement, let's find something that works for everyone, because originally we were going to have everybody with health care, some 50 million people. Now we find that it's just marginally been affected for some people in terms of their coverage, but it's a real concern. I think it's going to continue to be a concern until we find a replacement for it. And certainly, the way that we're going is not the way to go.
Well, it just shows that the people making these decisions do not understand the very basic principles of economics and market forces, because you have they're basing this thing working on everybody buying insurance basically at the same cost. Well, that's not how it works. If you bring less risk to the table, then historically you would pay less. I mean, you pay based upon the risk that's associated with you being a part of the process. And this is scaring away young people who generally have less need for health care, and so they pay less. But now they're being called upon to pay more. There's so many loopholes in this that if you don't buy insurance, but then later down the road you find you need it, then you can buy it then. So what's the incentive of doing it? It's like the people that constructed this had no clue about basic market tendencies and forces.
Well, they don't, and I think that's the troubling part. When you get people that design a law that most of them had a federal health care plan and still have a federal health care plan, when you really talk about the agencies, you know, when they're designing what will work and what doesn't work, they don't realize that you know, we're asking young adults to pay a higher premium, and they're healthier generally, but that's also when they're starting out. It may be that they're a single adult or a married couple just getting going, and we're putting a higher burden on them. It just keeps them down from really being able to experience the American dream. And so to have no basis of reality of how people make decisions is typical of Washington, D.C. You know, they believe that they can make the best decision, and yet what we find consistently is that they're not only wrong in their estimates, they're not only wrong in their costs, but ultimately they're wrong in the way that the American people's behavior would act when it deals with making purchases for themselves.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us this weekend. Congressman Mark Meadows of North Carolina, my guest, talking about a Congressional Budget Office report that came out this week showing that the number in terms of enrollees into the exchanges for the Obamacare is about 40% less than what was projected, which means it's not going to make it. It is taking on water very quickly. This leads us in, Congressman, to the next topic I want to quickly ask you about, and that is this week, as you come back, members of Congress will have an opportunity to override the president's veto. Only the fifth veto in his term as president. He's been protected mostly by the Senate, but now that the Republicans have a slight majority in the Senate, they've been able to get measures through, like this reconciliation measure. And this basically removes a lot of the funding for Obamacare and redirects about 80% of the money going to Planned Parenthood. What happens in the House this week when you take this up?
Well, obviously, we'll take that vote. It'll be interesting. I think what you'll see is a few of the Democrats who know that their constituents really are against this, that it's costing them money. The ones that are in those tougher districts perhaps side with the Republicans to override the veto. I think it'll be overwhelmingly the majority of the Republicans, if not all of the Republicans, and a handful, maybe as many as 30 Democrats that come across to override the veto. It will probably fall short. In fact, our recent estimates would say that it would fall far short. But, you know, if you're really voting the way that most of our districts would emphasize, and indeed the American people, it would be an easy vote on an override of the president's veto. But yet, what we will see is sadly, it will probably be defeated. But at least it sets the stage for what would be different if there's someone else at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And I think it's important that the American people see that, that we have a plan, and we're going to address that plan and hopefully turn our government back over to the people and where the power should rest.
Yeah, this certainly raises the stakes, I think, in the 2016 presidential election, because you have now shown, with a simple majority in the Senate through the budget reconciliation measure, that Obamacare and Planned Parenthood, two of the biggest prizes, jewels of the left, can be defunded. This forced partnership between taxpayers and Planned Parenthood can be ended. So with that said, you actually made a pretty significant announcement this week about the presidential race.
Well, I did, Tony. I mean, we came out just a few days ago for Senator Ted Cruz to endorse him in his presidential run. I can tell you, knowing Ted, when the lights are not on, the reporters are not there, he's the same guy that campaigns. He's the same guy in private that he is in public. And he really wants to make sure that a lot of that power that rests since 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue gets redirected back to Congress and to the American people where it really belongs. And so he's a strict constitutionalist. As you know, he's argued before the Supreme Court. And it would have been much easier for me to sit on the sidelines and just say we're not going to endorse someone. But I felt like it was important to come out. So we're going to give him our full support. We're encouraging not only our friends, but certainly the evangelicals that listen to this particular broadcast and others to really consider him. A lot has been said that I can tell you from a personal standpoint about Ted. He loves his family. He loves his country. But more importantly, he loves his God, and so we can be very thankful for that.
Congressman, you mentioned strict constructionist, referring to how he views the Constitution and the role of the courts. How important do you think the issue of the Supreme Court is in the upcoming election?
Well, it's critical, and that's something that's not getting talked about much, Tony, and as you know, there's a good chance that the next president will not only nominate two, but possibly three different Supreme Court justices. The whole makeup of the court could be defined, in fact, will be defined by the next president. And so having someone who really is a strict constructionist allows us to go back to those founding principles that our founding fathers had and of a limited government, one that actually looks at deriving its power from the people. And that's one of the reasons why I came out so strongly for Senator Ted Cruz and am encouraging a number of my colleagues to do the same.
All right. Well, Congressman Mark Meadows, thanks so much for taking a little bit of time out this weekend to talk with us.
Well, thank you. God bless you, Tony, and thank you for all you do. We just, as you know, here in a couple of days or even just a couple of hours, we're looking at votes starting in Iowa. So we'll just pray for wisdom and God's guidance on all of that.
All right. Well, look forward to seeing you this coming week. So take care. Enjoy the rest of the weekend.
Thank you.
All right. That was Congressman Mark Meadows of North Carolina. Hey, by the way, before we wrap up and go to the break, I just want to mention this. It's kind of a disclaimer that I need to give, although I didn't talk about it in this segment. We were talking about Congressman Meadows' endorsement. I also endorsed Senator Cruz this past week, and if you want to read about it, you can on my Facebook. But let me just say this. Neither the Family Research Council or the various radio networks that carry this program nor the Washington Watch program supports or opposes candidates for office, and my personal endorsements should not be interpreted by any as an endorsement by those organizations. Just want to make sure you were aware of that. But if you'd like to go to my Facebook page, you can see what I had to say. All right, folks, don't go away because we're going to come back with more of this weekend edition of Washington Watch. We're going to talk about a forthcoming study on pornography that's very disturbing when you see the trends. Don't go away. When we come back, the Senior Vice President for Policy, Rob Swartzwalder, joins us to talk about it.
Pain. We all know what it feels like. We all try to avoid it. But did you know that we likely started feeling pain at a very young age, well before we were born? Scientific studies are showing that the unborn child can feel pain by 20 weeks or even earlier. The medical research is on our side. It supports our legislative efforts to protect the unborn child from cruel suffering. For more information, visit frc.org/fetal pain.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us this weekend. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me at T Perkins. And again, I'll mention, if you're listening on Bot Radio Network, beginning Monday, that's right, beginning this coming Monday, you'll be able to tune in live to the daily edition of Washington Watch. It'll be 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 p.m. Eastern. So set that dial, set the clock, and join us for more Washington Watch Monday through Friday right there on the Bot Radio Network. All right, sexual immorality has been in constant growth with America's shift from biblical truth. There's a new study that has not yet come out, but it's on its way. It's called The Porn Phenomenon. Now, it shows that teenagers and adults are opting for more porn instead of sexual activity due to the risk involved. You know, we're seeing, in fact, we talked about it on our daily edition this week about the almost pandemic nature of STDs in this country. So people are turning to porn because they say it's safer. But is it? Is it really safer? Is pornography harmless? Are there no victims involved? Well, let's talk about that. Joining me now with some answers is FRC Senior Vice President Rob Swartzwalder. Rob, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you, Tony.
All right, let me first just ask you very generally, what do you make of these preliminary findings from this study?
Well, it's a very interesting study, and as you note, one of the main reasons people give for actively using pornography is that they think it's safer than actually participating in sexual intimacy. That speaks to a couple things. The rise of sexually transmitted disease, as you know, the CDC estimates, Centers for Disease Control, the federal agency that monitors these things, estimates there are around 19 million new cases of sexually transmitted disease annually. Now, some of those occur in the same people, but that is nonetheless a huge number of Americans, the great majority of them younger people who are getting diseases as a result of promiscuous sex. And so some young people think that because they turn to pornography, that this is going to prevent them from getting those kinds of diseases. What it does do is several things that are very harmful. Last year, FRC has a lecture series, of course, that you actively promote. We had a neurologist who is world class, one of the leaders in his field, come and give a lecture on pornography addiction. He said pornography is as addictive as cocaine. This is not something that people can just sort of entertain. It grips their lives. And the other thing is, and you mentioned this in your intro as well, pornography is not a victimless crime. It is something that is invasively cruel to women. Many women involved in pornography have serious physical side effects, health side effects. It affects relationships. One of the most interesting findings here is that among young people 25 to 30, and this is in this Barna study that you've noted, it says that roughly 40% of young people between 25 and 30 are viewing pornography to learn tips for their own sexual activities. Much of what takes place in pornography is very vile, and women have reported, there have been reports of women going in for counseling and women seeking medical treatment because they have been physically harmed in trying to replicate the positions and so forth that are displayed in the pornography their husbands have watched or their boyfriends have watched. This is a pandemic, and it's something that's gripping our culture in a very harsh and very damaging way.
Now, you mentioned, you know, women who are being harmed for this, but also this study, and this is in keeping with other studies that I have seen in recent years, is that increasingly women and young girls are using pornography. They're becoming addicted to pornography. Mm-hmm. And this is not without some really, as you took this comparison of it being as addictive as cocaine, there are side effects to cocaine addiction, to drug addiction, and there are side effects to pornography addiction, mm-hmm. which robs one of, you know, both emotional attachment, but also it sets people up to have relationships once they are married or when they're intimate. It robs them of the true joy of what God designed sexual intimacy between a man and a woman to be.
Absolutely. Any Christian couple should know and should experientially know that sexual intimacy is a beautiful gift of God, and it's designed for more than just sexual gratification. When we reduce each other to objects or just as a means of obtaining pleasure, we dehumanize our partners. Yet that's what our culture is promoting. There are numerous websites for casual hookups that attract millions of viewers here in the United States, debasing one another, treating one another as merely sexual creatures who are there to be used, takes away from so much of what the image of God that we all bear is about. We are, as you noted, relational beings, and sexual intimacy is exactly that. It's intimate. It's not something that should be indiscriminate or something that should be used simply for selfish gratification. We are whole beings. Scripture teaches us that when we join together sexually, that there is something much more than physical that goes on. There is an emotional and a spiritual bonding. The more that's disregarded, the harder people become, and the harder they become, the less capable they are of the kind of emotional and spiritual intimacy that God designed marriage to promote.
You're listening to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, joined by Rob Swartzwalder, Senior Vice President here at the Family Research Council. Rob, we just have a few minutes left, but I want to talk some practical sides of this, because one of the things that caught my attention about this survey that is not yet out, this was a kind of a preliminary report on the survey, is that teenagers are increasingly going to pornography. How do we communicate to our teenagers? And I'm speaking here primarily now to parents. Teens, if you're listening, look, we'll give it to you straight. But parents in particular, you have a critical role to play in this to protect your children, because they will be scarred by this. And this mm-hmm. is something that's going to carry them into adult life. How do we communicate to our teenagers the real danger that is found in pornography?
That's a huge question, Tony. A couple thoughts. The first is, Christian parents need to model the kind of relationship we want our children to have in the home. Parents need to show one another the love and respect, the joy that they have in their relationship, and make it clear that doesn't just spring out of thin air. It's because of fidelity, commitment, and a sense of honoring God in the relationship that has been given. We need our children to see that the kind of relationships that we have with our husbands and wives is only, that kind of relationship is only possible when there's fidelity and chastity. Infidelity is a profound scar on any marriage, yeah. And that includes infidelity with respect to pornography.
And it also is, to provide a little commentary there, is to respect one another, mm-hmm. and that's in our conversation about one another. It's the way we treat one another and speak to one another. I think that's extremely important. But I also think it's important, and we have done this in our home, that our children see appropriate affection, where, you know, we mm-hmm. hold hands, we hug, we kiss. Mm-hmm. I think children need to see it modeled from their parents, as opposed to seeing it modeled from Hollywood on some TV or movie.
It is so true, Tony. As they see the kind of respectful, warm, genuine affection that a husband and a wife can have for one another. What a contrast to what they are seeing in films, what's being promoted online. Interesting article a couple of years ago by a psychologist at Yale University who said that pornography not only objectifies women, it animalizes women. It makes them look like they're voracious kind of sexual predators. That's not the way a loving husband treats his wife. He treats her as what one of the New Testament writers calls a joint heir of life, the life that God gives. If that's the way our children see men treating their wives, they're going to realize that's real, and they don't need some surrogate substitute that's going to damage them, as you say, damage them really for life, because once an addiction gets etched into the brain, it's like an etching on brass. You can't erase it. You can try to avoid it, but it stays there. And that's one of the other things I think in as many ways as we can, we need to talk to our kids and say, look, this is not an innocent enjoyment. This is not like going and playing basketball.
They're literally chemical reactions that take place in the brain that etch these images in there. I mean, when you use that analogy, it is true. That is exactly what happens. Rob, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us. And this is an important topic. And parents, you need to be paying attention to this. And another way that you can deal with it is make sure you know what your children are watching. What's on their iPhones, their smartphones? What are they looking at on the computer? Look, the pornographers out there are, they are looking for ways to get to your children and to others. I mean, this is not passive. They're active in trying to draw more people into these traps. And so you have to be active in protecting your children. You know, look over their shoulder. It's okay, all right? Look over their shoulder, see what they're looking, check out their cookies, and if you know what that is, ask your kids, where's your cookies? But anyway, Rob, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Tony. Much appreciated.
All right, folks, well, we're out of time, so I leave you with that, and actually, I'll leave you with this from the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, when he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234.